welcome to the First 7-Inch Club. I guess it's just First 7-Inch Club. There's no the in there. Welcome to First 7-Inch Club. Each episode, this is a podcast where each episode we dig up a 7-inch by a forgotten or obscure band within the realms of hardcore, punk, and metal and discuss whether or not they're worth being remembered. We also provide factoids and trivia that we glean from the internet and our own personal experiences. Although we don't personally consider ourselves know-it-alls or experts, many other people do. I am Mike, and with me is Scott.
Mike, I don't like to think about time very often, but three times it's come up this week, and I started to wonder, how long has Mike been gone? Like, you moved to New York City in 2010?
Mid 2009, actually.
2009. So that's 12 years you've been gone from the Capital District. I still think of you as, like, you know, a part of my Capital District scene, because I got out of it around, it wasn't really part of it after that too much. Do you still feel any connection to Albany? Do you still feel a connection to the scene here?
You know, it's weird because I feel like I shouldn't, but there's still a lot of the same people kicking around. And I mean, I guess the only people I know that are active still in bands, like After the Fall is still a band. Yeah. They're still going. They started, I think, before Eviction, before our last band, and they're still going. Yeah. And then, like, I think Joe does, you know, there's people that Joe still does stuff. Byron still does stuff. I don't talk to these people every day, but, you know, there's still people from our time that are even you're still doing stuff. So yeah. I do have a connection, but, like, I was listening to that Demo Listen podcast, and they have a contributor from Albany that sends them, like, Albany bands. And I don't know who this guy is or, like, what, like, I forget what band he's in. They say, like, his band name, and I'm just like, fucking never heard of them. So There's definitely, like, you know, younger people out there that I have no connection to, but I still have some connection, at least.
I only just started on Demo Listen, and I only got one episode in. I like it, but they didn't do any Albany chat. So now you got me intrigued. I got
what are the hot bands? You don't know. Why am I asking you?
I mean, there's, like, Spellrunner was a punky, like, kind of like a haunted punky band. There's a bunch of them.
Yeah, it's some band like that that's, like, a punkier, like, you know, it's not like a fucking Troycore band or anything, but yeah, it's definitely like a punkier type of band that talks to them.
Mm-hmm. Hundreds of awe, or thousands of awe, or millions of awe, AU. AU or awe, I don't know. There's a bunch, like, there's bands that come and go while I'm there. You know, like, I'm in the room and the band already breaks up before they're even done. And Joe's already been in a couple other bands. I can't remember the name of it, but Joe was in kind of like a His Hero Is Gone kind of
heavier
band. Stuff. It was actually really good. He was singing for it. So
yeah,
I saw that, and then I never heard anything about it again. And yeah, our friend Byron and John and Jeff are in a screamy band called Scavengers. But the young kid bands, I only know a couple of them, and I don't know the really heavy ones.
That's good. I always say, like, my biggest fear when I was in Albany was, this guy's not gonna beat me up, I guess it doesn't matter, but I just never wanted to be the erotics guy, because, like, he would always be like, like, you know, I was young when I was in Albany, and we'd be hanging out at, like, young people places to hang out at. And, like, that dude would be there and be like, dude, you're kind of old, man. Like, this is fucking weird. And so, you know, you have to grow up at some point, even if
he was in bands when I was a kid. So, yeah.
And I never wanted to be that guy. I never wanted to be like, hey, kids, like, what's going on tonight? So I'm glad I'm not. But, you know, I'm still connected somewhat, just not connected that way, which would be creepy.
So I have this one. This is not even that great news, but because, you know, we keep talking about how no one, like, 7-inch is kind of dead. The 7-inch is a medium. And I don't even know if that's true, because I don't really keep up with new releases or try and buy physical media. But I just happen to be looking at some news today, and there's like a current metal band who's putting out a 7-inch. And I was like, that's weird. So there's this band called Horn Doll, who are a band who sings about the sweet. They have a theme. They're the kind of like a post Mastodon, post High on Fire. You know, they don't sound like that, but they're the kind of band that can only exist after the floodgates were open on, you know, being sort of 70s sounding death metal or whatever. But they sing about the Swedish Rust Belt. I guess there's cities in Sweden that are like the movie Gung Ho, or like Flint. Mm. Unexcusably racist movie Gung Ho that I watch all the time. But, you know, like a Flint, Michigan or something, where, like, the factory shut down and ruined the city. Yeah. And these guys,
so, kind of like Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce Springsteen. Yeah. So I guess this city was ruined in the 70s and then stayed ruined, and everyone's broke. And now Google is moving in, and this is real. This is like a real story. Google is moving in, and they're just like, yeah, we're going to use your free electricity. And also, we're going to use the lake that you use for water to cool our servers and all this like weird shit. So they remember they're writing songs about this, and their 7-inch is called Be Evil. because the Google slogan, I guess, is don't be evil. I don't really know about that, but I guess Google has like a corporate mandate of don't be evil. And the singer, I think he's the singer of Horndahl, says, that's not okay, Google. What good-hearted company has a motto like don't be evil? Only a demon needs that type of everyday reminder. So there's a 7-inch. And so it's on yellow vinyl, limited to 300 copies. So if you're looking for the 7-inch that's coming out this year, Horndahl, Be Evil. That's the one.
Well, when I have a spare $17 to buy a brand new 7-inch, I'll put it aside for this 7-inch. That reminds me that there was, I don't know who tweeted it, but somebody tweeted like, people shouldn't bitch about 7-inches being $10. Like bands, like hardcore bands and metal, or I think he just specifically said hardcore bands. He said they always devalue their art. And it's just like, yeah. I don't think you get the point, dude. Like $10 is a fucking lot, man. that's a lot of cash to it sucks that they got inflated that way, but it happens. Like, you just gotta give up the ghost.
That sounds targeted at us. Who is who is this person?
I think somebody Dylan the aka Drug Dogs knows, but he's the one who retweeted it, and I saw it and I texted him and I was like, I don't agree with this, but you know, I get it. Like you just have to sell it that way. Like, I think if you're an established band that has like a good fan base, you can drop a 7-inch for $10 and people just be like, hey, you know, I really like that band. But I think it's pretty tough to be a band just getting off of a demo and being like, okay, here's our $10 7-inch. Like, I think that's tough.
You're just selling a physical object for fun. Nobody needs it. You really should just put out a wax cylinder or like a stone tablet or something. Yeah. Sell people the Viewmaster, whatever band made the Viewmaster thing. That's my kind of comedy right there. They sold a Viewmaster with the Viewmaster viewer. Was it Full of Hell?
I don't remember what the band was. Yeah.
I don't even like Full of Hell that much, but I very nearly bought it just because of I got a bunch of Viewmasters in my basement and I could finally look at them because I'd have a Viewmaster viewer.
I got a few things. Then we have a supplementary review. Jeff was nice enough to send his band's record, Quantum Colossus. So we're going to be talking about that in a minute. But first off, speaking of records, got some new records coming in finally. Instead of buying my family or myself anything for Black Friday, I was buying 7-inches like a fucking moron for this stupid podcast that, you know, 30 or 40 people listen to. But hey, I do it for you guys. So there's a couple requests that have just been nagging requests, and I was kind of waiting for the right time to buy them. So Chris and Instagram Get Awesome Records, I don't know your real name, but you both requested something, and those are in the mail. So hopefully next week or the week after, we'll start a couple request episodes, which will be good. Mm-hmm. Also, just a few minutes ago before we started, I tried that new Gingerbread Mountain Dew. And my girlfriend bought me a copy. She bought me a bottle of it. And, you know, it's not too bad. It's I can't believe I'm saying this, but it's subtle for a Mountain Dew flavor. And it does have that basement water taste. It definitely has that taste to it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's just one of those things. I don't know if it happens to you, too, but I don't ever drink full flavor, full sound soda. So anytime I drink like a sugar soda, it just feels like my mouth is being coated in frosting while I drink or something. So it's not really enjoyable.
No.
But I mean, for Mountain Dew, it's probably one of the better flavors just because Mountain Dew has such wretched flavors all the time. So
when I see kids or any adults, anybody, but especially kids that are drinking like the full sugar drinks the way I drink diet ones. And I have a problem. I drink diet soda as my main fluid at all times. It's like, it's a problem. But when I see like kids that are just drinking like red energy drinks and like Mountain Dews and, you know, that kind of stuff, and that's like their drink all day, I'm like, man, that makes me feel really bad in my mouth. It makes me feel really like aftertasty.
That's weird because I was definitely one of those people for a long time, but now I can't like...
Yeah,
I took like a few sips out of that Mountain Dew, and I was like, I can't do any more of this. It's gonna fucking make me sick.
Yeah, well, I think that's supposed to be the limiter. You're supposed to have like a soda once a day. You know, like have us like a tasty little soda, nice little treat for yourself at the end of the day, and then put it away and not sit down and drink four more before before 10 a.m.
That's how I believe the Japanese do it. Like, that's why you get all these cute little Japanese sodas, because that's their single treat for the day. That one Coca-Cola.
They got it. They got it down.
It's just kind of how, like, 40 ounces are supposed to be multiple servings. And many people have told me that, like, their dads or their grandpas would keep a 40 ounce in the refrigerator and just, you know, pour it in a glass every once in a while, which is insane to think about. Second to last, before we get to this band review and the announcement of the actual main band, but I started this project in the Discord. I've been going over every single Corpse Grinder era Cannibal Corpse record and reviewing them. And this is like, I started this, I don't know, because again, Demolition played a Cannibal Corpse song as an intro to one of their episodes, and I never heard it, and it made me kind of realize I've never listened to anything beyond Chris Barnes era Cannibal Corpse. And I've also never, because I don't know, like, it was just kind of like when we were talking about the Charles Manson stuff a few episodes ago, like, after like junior year, like, Cannibal Corpse was like a little on the nose, and it's just like I don't want to listen to this, like, so I never really, by the time Corpse Grinder era Cannibal Corpse came around, I was already out of that. But the thing is, I've been around death metal for, you know, close to 30 years probably, but I've never had to think critically about it. I've never had to, like, sit down and be like, what do people like about this? Because I've just never, it's just been like noise for my whole life. So it's a project, and I've already sold the publishing rights. So this will eventually, in a few months, be in print, so you can read it too, guys. But I mean, it's not going to be lengthy. This is just going to be a few pages in a zine, but it will be printed up. But I've been enjoying it so far. It's been giving me I don't know, just clarity, I guess, on death metal and, like, understanding what people like. I feel like when you guys talk about it in the Discord, I feel like a lot of the appeal to death metal is that you probably have to be in a band. Like, it seems like a lot of people that like death metal are also in a death metal band.
And I
think a lot of it has to, like, it goes on, like, sound and guitar tone and stuff like that. And that stuff's over my head. Like, I get it. Like, I understand it. But it just seems like that's one of the main appeals, is, like, the sound itself.
I think the divider among my, at least people I know and my friends, is that people who don't play instruments or don't play in bands or don't care to like the funnier stuff more. They like like slam metal and gore grind and stuff that's barely, like, in the old days, there was stuff that you would only get through tape trading, like noise bands, like Pile of Eggs and stuff like that, or the Meat Shits. That was, it's just silly. And that tends to appeal to people who are either the vocalist who don't really play an instrument, or people who just don't play music at all. And the guys who play music follow their instrument. So drummers want to hear like Cryptopsy, and guitarists want to hear, you know, Rings of Saturn, and bassists, I don't know what the fuck bassists. I'm a bassist. I don't like the ones with the slap bass, and I don't really love the ones with the space frog, like the Cynic fretless thing or whatever. But bassists, what are you listening to?
Death metal bassists, let us know what you.
I meant to segue to this story earlier, like, 'cause that's what I was saying, the time thing. You know, you had asked, you said something like, yeah, I don't listen to that later Cannibal Corpse. And I was like, Corpse Grind has been in the band since 95, since I was in high school. He's been in the, you know, way longer than Chris Barnes was ever in it. But I still think of it the same way. I still think of him as, like, the newer guy from Cannibal Corpse.
Yeah, because I don't know. I guess it's just no one in my circle of friends has ever followed Cannibal Corpse outside of those first few records. Like, I know I've seen 6 Feet Under, I think, I don't think we played with them. No, I think Lariat played with them, and I was just doing their merch or something. But I've seen 6 Feet Under, like, but yeah, I just never really followed through. I just assumed no one cared about them anymore. But I've left
for 6 Feet Under. I've, like, gone outside for 6 Feet Under several times. But yeah, like, I think that they're a placeholder band. Like, Cannibal Corpse is fine. There's nothing wrong with them, but it's also a band that people who don't listen to other death metal, it's like the Joy Division shirt of
death metal.
Like, if you don't listen to other death metal, you'll just slot in some Cannibal Corpse. But it's good. Have you found variety? Like, do you think, like, now that you've listened to it in bulk, is there variety, or is it just kind of like?
Yeah, I think I've listened to the first three records. I think the first one's all right. I think the first one, I don't remember the name, but the second one is the Gallery of Suicide. I think that one sucks. And I think the third one is the Bloodthirst, I think it is, yeah. Or something like that. Yeah, that one's really good. So if that's the peak, then I'm fine, even though I have like seven more to listen to. But I think that record's really, really good. So yeah, I'm getting the nuances. I'm gonna help the normies out with Cannibal Corpse, so you can wear those Cannibal Corpse shirts, even though you've only heard Hammer Smash Face a few times. Like, I'm gonna help us normies out with death metal. I'm gonna be the normies guy. Maybe I'll start my own zine, the Normies Guide to Death Metal, where I just
that'd be great.
Go over all this stuff. But okay, so we have again, I'm holding out on the main topic, but before we get that, Jeff from the old Podcast Town Facebook sent us his band's record, Quantum Colossus. The name of the record is Stations of the Apocalypse. He's very nice enough to send this, because this is a 12-inch LP. It's actually, I guess it's not, it's a 12-inch. I don't know if it's an LP, because it's only six songs, so it's not really a long player. It's more of an EP. Yeah. But, you know, I know this shit's expensive, so thanks a lot, Jeff. I believe this is not on a record label. I believe this is self-released, so I can't shout them out. They have a Bandcamp, although this record is not on Bandcamp, so I would like to think that maybe the band is like me, and they abandoned Bandcamp because they don't like it, because I, too, do not like Bandcamp. But if you want to find them on Bandcamp, their older record is on there. It's Quantum Colossus. .bandcamp.com. But this record is on Spotify, so you can go to Spotify and search Quantum Colossus Stations of the Apocalypse, and you can listen to it if you want. But I think it did say somewhere on the Spotify or something what they classified their music as. Also, they're under the radar. They're not on Discogs. They're very under the radar, very underground. So we can't dox them or anything, I think it said something about sci-fi metal or something like that. So this isn't like hardcore or any punk or anything we usually talk about. So it's tough for me, because I only know those three things. I only know hardcore. I know some punk. I know rap music really well. And then, like, you know, a few other things, but, this is a little out of my league. Not that I don't understand this is how I feel about this record. Actually, I want to talk about the art first, because everything's like drawn. Like, this is some artist. The back has a back cover. They have like there's three or four different people that did the art for this. So there's a cover, obviously a back cover. And then on the inside, there's like an insert, which is cool. It's like 11 by 17 or 11 by 14 kind of like wall poster insert, which is pretty cool. And that's like super, super trippy and kind of like trippy, drippy art. And the front is like a drawing, like kind of a pencil, colored pencil drawing of an astronaut. And his reflection is a bunch of shit happening. And then the back is like another kind of pencil drawing. I think they fucked up, and they should have taken that insert and made that the cover and the back cover and had it a wrap around, because that's a much more striking image than what the cover is and the back cover is. And I think that would have like stuck out more and been like, whoa, what the fuck is this? Because I think that inside wall poster is pretty sick. That's my type of shit. I like it a lot. The music itself, I guess the only way I could put it is it's kind of like starter pack metal. It's like when you're in high school and you have like a group of friends and you're all kind of just like dipping your toes into stuff. And it's like, you know, like bands like Gwar, like that's a band like all your friends in high school could have met in the middle about at the time, like MOD, even though they're very problematic. Young people out there, I don't suggest them, but you know, all the like the jokey the jokey thrash bands and like the jokey Lawnmower Death, I have to mention them anytime I can, but Mucky Pop, just
the
like
Meat Men. The Meat Men for sure.
Yeah, just like bands like that. And then after a while, like, you probably just grow into your own tastes and go your own way and either get into fucking noise or, you know, industrial or hardcore or something. But, you know, there are people out there that just continuously, Mr. Bungle's another one that I know they don't sound like that, but, you know, it's like they're one of those universal bands that everybody who's ever listened to metal knows who the fuck Mr. Bungle is for some reason. it's just, you know, but there are people that just grow and just keep listening to this music. I am not one of those people. I've abandoned this type of music a long time ago. But it has all the trappings, like it has like, you know, vague punk parts, vague metal parts, kind of heavy parts. The vocals are very much in that Mucky Pup jokey vein, even though I don't think anything on here is like as jokey as, like, you know, Batman the Butt Ripper or anything like that.
Three dead gophers.
Yeah, I don't think anything's like hippies hate water on this or anything like that. But, you know, it's just like, it's that tone. It's like that Guar tone to where you're like, this guy's saying jokes. I know it by his voice. But yeah, so I think if you're a youngster, you're not discovering your way in music yet, it's kind of that. It's kind of just like a fun bar band, not bar rock, because bar rock's horrible. But, like, you know, like, if you saw this band live, they'd probably be playing with, like, your friend's band that, like, also plays vague music. It's like when guys come together and just start a band and don't really have any fucking horrible labels like, you know, we did growing up, bestowed upon us. So I guess it's fun. It's not really my thing, because, like I said, I've been trapped into labels my whole life. But, you know, I think if you are that type of person that's still into Guar and shit like that, this is, I mean, I don't know how big that scene is, so this might be a brand new band for you. This might be the first new band you've listened to in 20 years, because, like I said, I don't know how that scene goes, but it's definitely, like, in that vein of that type of rock music or metal music. So yeah, if you're into that shit, I would definitely check this out.
Jeff mentioned this in the Facebook thread, and I just kind of, like, took a look at his band and forgot, like, not in a bad way. I was just like, oh, yeah, and I just went over and looked at it, and I kind of scanned around it real quick, but didn't really have time. And I was thinking, to me, it kind of at that the other record made me think of, like, Orange Goblin or one of those kind of, like, okay, sci-fi stoner. I don't like that stuff. I don't like The Sword. I don't like Orange Goblin. I don't really like.
I liked Orange Goblin. That's only one of those bands I really liked. But yeah,
I don't think they're bad. It's just I don't like, you know, too many of those bands will just ride the E string, the down down now down down, and I hate that riff. And they have something on one of the records that kind of sounded like that. And I just closed the book. I was like, well, this is going to suck to review. But they don't sound like that way. I'm wrong. Like, it's not, I mean, maybe that record does. I don't know. I have to go back to that. But this record is not that. This is just like thrash. This is like very classic. You know, it's all over the place, but it's like thrash metal. And the first song is like Voivod. Like, the first song has these Voivod riffs all over it. I love Voivod. You don't hear a lot of that. I mean, like, a lot of people like rip off the Voivod logo and pretend that they're into Voivod, but very few people just play Voivod riffs as their thing. And then there's a song Patient Zero that gets kind of doomy and moody, but then that goes to just regular thrash parts too, which I think that's kind of good. You should just pivot around what you like. You should kind of stick to a pole that you enjoy. I wish there was a little bit more of the Voivod influence. It kind of goes away after that first song. I guess the complaint is going to be the vocals. Sorry, Jeff, like, you're the submitter, but you knew what you were getting into. You sent it to us. We're the truth sayers. We're not going to fuck around. You come to this first 7-inch club, we're going to give you the truth. The vocals are kind of the weak link of the band, because I think the band sounds pretty serious. The band doesn't really sound jokey to me at all. They sound like pretty decent, pretty varied, classic kind of thrash, hard rock, thrash metal. But I don't think his vocals are a deal breaker either. They are kind of jokey. He is a little bit loose on his rhythm. But, you know, there's ample evidence in our many hours of podcasting that I am a real piece of shit about vocalists. I'm very hard on them. I give them no quarter. And these vocals are pretty loose, but I'm not hating the band. So, I mean, that's like, it's like you got an award, basically. Like, you passed through some kind of heat test here. He reminds me of, like, every band's first singer. You know, every thrash band that ends up
with,
like,
back, Jeff. Better watch your fucking back.
Right. That's what I mean. Like, every band that ends up with the operatic, like, Bruce Dickinson has a Paul Di'Anno, and Joey Belladonna has a Neil Turbin. The guy who's earlier that just kind of yells or whatever, he reminds me of that a little bit. But guess what? Those guys have fans. People love Paul Di'Anno. Plenty of people love Paul Bailoff from Exodus more than they like Zetro. I think it's all right. I kind of like this. I was expecting to really have to slog through this. I will tell you that my band put out a record with a Space Octopus way before yours. So, you know, look that up. You guys are riding that theme a little harder than we are. It looks like every one of your albums has a Space Octopus. We were first.
So, Jeff, if Scott is right, I want to give you a little advice. Look up Mucky Pup. They've only had one singer. See what Chris Milnes did to keep Mucky Pup in their good graces, even though I think he was the only member that stayed the whole entire time. But so maybe you would need to start your own Mucky Pup, Jeff. But anyway, this is a show about 7 inches, old 7 inches, and we're finally getting to the main event. This is a band called Ruined in a Day. And the 7-inch, I guess, is called 1000. That's also the name of the first track. So I don't know if that's the formal name or what. But it's a band, Ruined in a Day. Ruined in a Day, 1000 on Alone Records. Ruined in a Day had a couple releases. They had this, and then they had a couple split releases, all on Alone Records. They were just carrying the flag, the flag bearers of Alone Records. But they did some splits with Sparklights of Friction and Gray AM. Their discogs is a little murky, because if you click on their names, they're on their band page. The only list Ruined in a Day for 3 out of 4 of them, but it only lists this one record. So it's just like the other two records aren't even listed on Discogs. So, but this is a little Easter egg. And I guess one of the reasons I chose this, not really, but I was just trying to find any morsel of interesting information. But John Shipper, who I don't know what he played in Ruined in a Day. Let me see. John was the... He was the guitarist. I forgot to mention Ruined in a Day is from Wisconsin. They're from Madison, Wisconsin. Last week we did Far Cry from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, not too far from Madison. And John Shipper was also in a band called War Cry in 1994, the same time Far Cry was a band. And so I think that's I want to know if War Cry and Far Cry ever played a show together in Wisconsin, because that would be pretty annoying to be on the bill with a band that has only one letter difference in their name. But so I thought that was pretty cool. Outside of that, yeah. So I don't really know if these guys did anything else, because I Googled some names and I found like one led to a lawyer in Wisconsin, and I assume that's the guy's dad, because I think he was like super old, like way too old to be in a band in the year 2000. So I don't know. It seems like they put out a few things all pretty much around the year 2000. I think everything they did came out in 2000 or 2001. So it's very possible they did like a 6-song recording session and split it between 3 records and then fucking disappeared. I remember this record from back in the day. So it's not completely foreign to me. But Scott, do you have any interesting info that you could dig up about Ruined in a Day?
Just two little things. John Shipper from Warcry. Warcry was label mates with Abnegation.
Okay.
On Militant Records. And this one blog I found says that they were the worst band to ever be on Militant Records.
Hmm.
And they also had a logo that I guess made them pretty famous for bad reasons, because it shows like a 90s straight edge hoodie guy aiming like a gun at what you could construe as a Rasta, who is shown smoking a joint with stinky stink squiggles coming off of him.
Oh my God.
So, you know, they got a Rasta guy who's stinky smoking a joint, and they're going to kill him. And, 95. I mean, now you can't do that. But back then, news traveled different ways back then. So if you screwed up with that logo, and then they put it on something else later. So they were proud of it. They kept rolling with it. And the only other thing I could find was that the guy Jack Hess, before he was in this band, wrote, or maybe it's after, he wrote reviews for a prog website called Ground and Sky. And the whole thing, like, I found a Wayback. I just looked at it for the hell of it. There's a Wayback machine snapshot of it, and it hasn't changed in like 12 years or something like that. It died in 2008. And his review, his profile is like, yeah, I got into prog. You know, I'm kind of new. I got into it in the 90s. I listened to Rush. I kind of like Rush, but, you know, I don't like the rest of prog. I kind of don't like prog that much. He's like, this guy's a real barrel of laughs. Like, he's writing for a prog website, but his whole profile is like, yeah, I guess I don't really like prog that much.
That's what's going to happen for my new death metal website. Where I'm going to say, yeah, I got into Cannibal Corpse in 2021. I don't really like death metal that much, but here I am, right? My death metal website. I'm looking at this Warcry logo. This is not too cool. This is and it was called Edge Will Remain. Oh my God. Yeah. This might be some, I might have to just bust this out somewhere and be like, you guys ever heard this shit? Cause I'm sure it's fucking, I'm sure it's tough. I'm sure it's
I think
tough.
When somebody called them on it on the more, like on a blog or in a comment section more recently, they were like, hey, nobody had a sense of humor back then. So they're still holding on to it. They don't see the problem yet.
But Ruined in a Day is also a New Order. That's a New Order song. I don't think it's a very popular New Order song, but it is a New Order song. This was back when I think you could just name your band a New Order song and sound nothing like New Order and just be like, hey, deal with it. What are you going to do? Yeah. I don't think that's a practice anymore, but maybe bands still do that. But it was definitely more common back then. But the main reason I wanted to talk about this is because it's on Alone Records, which was a record label out of Oswego, New York, upstate. And they were like definitely not a household name. Like, I don't think anybody talks about this record label anymore. But they were around from basically the late 90s to... the mid-ish to the, I think their last release was 2004, and they are like a strong record label. Like, they put out a lot of great stuff. They put out early All Else Failed stuff, the August Prophecy, which, you know, may not be your thing, but they put it out. God Below, which was kind of a thing for a minute. It was a lot of bands that were like kind of a thing for their time, and then they didn't really stand the test of time. Anodyne, which long-standing rumor that a member of Anodyne was in the child punk band Old Skull. I don't know if that's ever been confirmed or if anybody cares outside of me and Scott, but that was a rumor for a long time.
They kind of look like a grown Old Skull.
So, yeah, I mean, they were a thing for a minute. Jerome's Dream was, I think they still have lasting power. Shockwave, that Gray AM Ruined in Day 7-inch. I'm pretty sure I had that. Our old label mates, the Scarlet Letter, the split with the Assistant, both bands, very underrated bands that were kind of like, you know, kind of popular in their scenes for a few months and then just kind of disappeared, but both very good bands. Race Bannon, Joshua Fit for Battle. They put out a lot of cool shit, and just kind of like, I don't know, once they packed up shop, I don't think anybody cared anymore.
Yeah.
But while they were around, just look at their discography. It's pretty fucking strong. But yeah, so that's why I want to do this. That's pretty much the label rundown and the my personal reasons, I guess.
This label is really heavy on what they call scrams. This is like the scrams era of emo. And like, so all the gaps of that, if any of the bands that you don't remember, they're scrams bands. Almost to the, like, every single one of them is like, they say screamo in their discogs. Nobody says that. No one just admits to being screamo except for the scrams bands. And there's a couple outliers on there, like Race Band's kind of a weirdo noise band. And then they have a band called Rapider Than Horsepower, who are very annoying to listen to.
Yeah, I remember them. They suck. Yeah.
Very, very bad.
Yeah.
So the two splits that they did, the Gray AM, Nick set up a show with my band Mata Burrow and the Gray AM. Mm-hmm. And I believe they were the first like rock and roll hardcore band I ever played with, you know, who were like really into partying and like throwing the horn hand and rocking. Pretty sure the drummer set his cymbals on fire in Nick's apartment. I can't remember if I even witnessed that or not. I think I might have gone to get a burrito because I just was like, I don't like this. I think I would. And the other band is Sparklights to Friction. Let's talk about this all episode. Discogs is a mess because Sparklights to Friction is only known really because the guy went on to sing for One King Down for a little while.
Yeah.
Before, when Rob quit for a little while, he sang on God Loves Man Kills, which I think they just redid with Adam. They're like, fuck that guy. They redid that album with Rob singing. And there's no trace of that on his. There is a Discogs link that will lead to that, but it's not like the Sparklights to Friction doesn't connect to any One King Down releases or anything like that. There's no connection. But, you know, those two things plus the upstate New York label brings a little sneaky dose of real raw regional flavor to today's episode. Yeah. And that's as far as it's going to go. But
there. That's kind of why I picked it. I kind of vaguely remember this record and like, I don't know if I owned it or just remember the cover. And I definitely either had that Gray AM record or Sparklights to Friction or both. I might have had like the Sparklights to Friction CD or something. But But yeah, I mean, and yeah, like Alone Records was just around back then when we were around. And like I said, the Assistant and Scarlet Letter connection there. So yeah, it brings back memories, but not so much just for this specific record. But I thought it would be interesting to at least talk about. And plus, we're coming back from a long holiday and it's an easy two song jaunt. And we had to review that other record, too. So but yeah, this is I guess we'll get into the layout. So I'm going to be frank here. This is kind of just like. if there has like a, you know, press your own 7-inch template for a cover and then like a layout and stuff like that, might be the honest to God truth. This might have been in like some kind of fucking package deal at the record plant. Like, yeah, you get 3 JPEGs, you get choice of 4 fonts, and like that's it. Because even though the actual labels on the record are very much test press style, almost a little more nuanced than test press, but yeah. Pretty much test press style. But the cover, I think, has a very clever nod where it connects the... it shows a map, like a road map. Back in the day before the iPhone, you had to bust out a map and it would just look like a bunch of veins on paper. And it just made no fucking sense because I don't know how anybody read those. But it shows Madison, Wisconsin all the way at the left end of the 7-inch cover, and then upstate New York all the way at the right end. So it's kind of just like a little nod, like, hey, you know, for some reason we're from Madison, Wisconsin, but we have put out 3 records on an upstate New York mostly upstate New York band record label I guess they're just really liked us. But yeah, outside of that, it is just a very bland, like, there's nothing going on. You open it up and there's one of those kind of long strips of picture collage of blurry instrument playing, and then just giant font for the 2 tracks and their sparse lyrics, and just giant font all over, just giant plain, like, rigid cornered kind of impact font, like double to triple to quadruple space, trying to just eat all that white space up because there's so much of it, because they have nothing to do. Like, they're just like, they use their 5 JPEG limit, and they're just like, fuck, all we have left is this one font that we could try and spread out. And it's, you know, I don't think if I picked this up, I would know right away what this sounded like. The back, the track listing of the 2 tracks where it like lists the song title, and then and the bottom it lists like a fraction of a lyric. That's a little emo, a little screamo, so that might have given me a hint. But outside of that, this is a pretty generic album cover, so it's tough to look at it and go, yes, I know what I'm getting into.
Yeah, this is like this is the lunch scene in The Breakfast Club where he goes, well, Brian, this is a very nutritious lunch. That's what you gave me. You gave me, like, just the record sleeve, not one single additional molecule of added value or content, no personality.
No.
And I said this, my notes say the exact same thing. I think that this is just a service the pressing plant offered you. Like, maybe you had to pay $50 for the service or something like that. The only thing I'll say is that doing the 1-point outline on the big bold font, that's a fucking cowardly move. And they do it several times. So ruin the day, you're going to have to live with that. I called you fucking cowards for what you did.
Why do you hate that?
That's the default. Like, if you open up Illustrator and you say, yeah, I want a stroke on the font, and it puts the 1-point font, the 1-point stroke on your font, you didn't do any more work. Bump that up to 3, you fucking piece of shit. Bump that up to 3 and do the miters and make it look nice. This is for the permanent. This is for your record. It's going but everywhere.
It's the default because it looks the best. I don't know. I don't agree with this.
Bullshit.
At all. Whatever.
So bump it to 3.
So we get in the music. It's 2 tracks, 6 or 7 minutes. It's real quick, real quick. We're going to be in and out here. The first track is called 1,000. Emo, like right before it tipped, and I think I want to say Jimmy Eat World and Dashboard Confessional and Bright Eyes, they were the ones that really tipped it, but this was like right at the end of where this band sounds fairly polished. Like, they don't sound like absolute shit. They obviously know what they're doing, but they're not quite commercial yet. They're not quite ready for the Starbucks. So it's kind of like, this is probably, you know, the highest point for me where I'm like, this is pretty good. I like this. I like this sound. I mean, it lasted for months and then it was completely ruined forever, but I did like this sound. Unfortunately, the vocalist has chosen a style of vocals that I don't think anybody could like. I don't know who made this popular. Like, he just draws out his words. Like, he'll just hang on a word for, like, you know, just like that. And I'm racking my brain because I know the answer is obvious, but I just can't think of who popularized that. But he is not good at it. This is like, and it sucks because, you know, a few episodes ago, we were ragging on the singer of Candle for being a shy boy hiding behind the drum set, singing as softly as he can. unfortunately, this guy is very proud of his vocals, and he should switch places with Candle and not be so proud and maybe hide behind that drum set and take that microphone away from his face. After a few listens, it gets kind of like not as noticeable. The first time I listened to it, I was just like, I can't believe there was nobody in that recording studio that was like, you got to do this again, man. But after a while, you know, it kind of gets used to it. Still, I can't believe there wasn't anybody in the studio. Like, I mean, this is 2000. There's probably using a computer where they could have, you know, easily deleted and started again. Yeah. So, I can't. If this was the best take, oh boy, I can't imagine what the bad takes were. For whatever reason, this is on Spotify. It's weird because they're like they barely have a Discogs. I can't remember if it's on YouTube. And there's another band called Ruined in a Day that's like some techno thing. I swear, if you guys
always,
if you guys are not up on Spotify, there's a techno version of every single band name you've ever heard. but yeah, so I don't know if it like there's like a song catcher that just catches things, and if there's a band with that name, they just add it or what. But this is shockingly on Spotify, and I think the clearer, less scratchy 7-inch version, his vocals sound a bit better, but. I don't know. Maybe that's just from listening to it a bunch. There's a lot of lyrical repetition in this, like a fucking lot. And it's fine. I don't mind it that much. Although it seems like just the amount of it and what he's repeating seems like laziness. It seems like this guy maybe, you know, he just wanted to be in a band and not do the work. And, I mean, he's already the vocalist. So like, there you go. He's halfway
right to the top, straight to the top.
Yeah, you already don't have to do much, buddy. So, but he is just very lazy. He's like, hey, you know, I'm just gonna sing this 7 or 8 times. Like I said, I usually don't mind that, but when the lyrics are so sparse and you're just, dude, you could have added like a few more lines or just cut the song in half. But overall, musically, I think this is pretty decent. I could do without the vocalist, but this song I think is pretty decent.
This song had kind of a cool transformation because I was definitely just gonna flush it. I'm not that versed, even though I was kind of like an emo guy for a little bit. I was not that versed in this era, and it just like to me it started to remind me of a bad Sunny Day Real Estate. I think that the moaning kind of like hanging on a word thing to me. I keep saying Captain Jazz, but I think he influenced a lot of people, and he did that a lot. Just kind of like drifting away on a syllable was his thing. But then it gets to the part where he goes, I sit right here and wait for you. I like that. I like that part. It's that simple. I was like, I like this song now. It's all it took. I just hit like how hard he hits that weight. Mm. The word weight, he solved the song for me completely. And they do it a bunch of times. So it's like when you get a cookie with a lot of chocolate chips because they only have about 6 words. He brought not even a notebook scrap of paper with him into that booth. So he says these words a lot. Then after that, that kind of laps into pretty ordinary, like epic emo ending, and the vocals follow the guitar entirely, which I think there's a word for that. Like when someone does a soundtrack and the music follows what the person's doing on the screen, that's called Mickey Mousing. Like if you're walking and the music goes do, 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 that's called Mickey Mousing. I think there's a term like that for when you just sing the guitar part. And don't make up your own melody or your own rhythm or anything like that. Maybe we'll just call it the Ruin in the Day because you're doing it. There should be a word for it. But, you know, let's focus on the positive. He jumps hard on that word weight, and it's an all-time move. I swear to God, it fixed the song in real time for me and actually ended up kind of digging the song after that.
Okay, then we flip it over. Side B is a song called Breathing Room.
Yeah.
this, I think the first song is definitely for the ladies. This song, a little more for the fellas. I don't know who I'm kidding. This is definitely still for the ladies, but it has a little more upbeat, hanging out with the bros type of feel to it. It's a little more, I wouldn't say masculine, but, you know, a little more friendly for the gym, I guess. You know, like that kind of deal. But now I don't know. I think me and Scott might disagree on this song, because this song has a lot of dual vocals and it sounds 1,000 times better for the mm-hmm. first song with just the one guy singing. But the guy still needs to be in front of the dual vocals, so he's holding out the last syllable of every line longer yeah. than the other guy doing it. So it's just like, and it sounds like the song is cursed by like a fucking a ghost from the sea, like a fucking sea witch is coming up from the ocean and just cursing the song with horrible vocals. And I can't believe yeah. like they listen to this back. They're sitting in the studio listening back, and the guitarist or bassist, whoever did the backup vocals, wasn't just like, we should just kick this guy out, like we don't need him. He's like the guitarist and the bassist could have just did all the singing, just the dual singing together the whole time throughout the whole tracks. Came up with probably just the amount of same lyrics, unless they were English as a second language, or they just did. The one guy was in War Cry, who was very straight edge and that scary logo. So maybe it's for the best he didn't write the lyrics. Maybe it was, but a few years later, maybe he matured. But either way, it sounds great when they're doing the dual thing, even with the ghostly curse on the song. And then the chorus is great. Like, I can't remember the words off the top of my head, but it sounds fucking great. It sounds pro. It sounds strong. It's really good. They should have ended it, though. The verses, I think, are all the same lyrics. So I don't know why they went for a third verse. Like, you could have just ended it. It would have been a lot stronger as a shorter song. But maybe they wanted to get their money's worth on this 7-inch, so I understand. Just repeating that first verse over and over again. They do like a kind of three-guy gang vocals that's a little different from the regular dual vocals in the song. That's also cool. And then at the end, he gets one last comically long held out word where he was just like it was a dare to see how long he could hold out the last word on the song and just completely try and ruin it. But overall, like I this song is great. I wish there was a little more. Like I'm not going to fucking go and find those other 2 7-inches, but if this was like a 6-song EP instead, I would like to hear the total package. But yeah, I think this song is pretty good.
Most of the kind of like harder emo post-hardcore bands, like the ones with like the kind of burly singers, like would have one cool song that would make, yeah. they might make you think that you like the band. Like Small Brown Bike had Cannons and Tanks, I think.
Yeah.
Hot Water Music had one. I think it was like 200 Years or something like that. That like all the wimpy bands that had a burly singer, like the burly singer would have at least like one tight, urgent, heavy song that almost sold you on it. And Ruined in a Day has cracked that code. They made that song that ended the record. Mm-hmm. They're like, here's our urgent, burly, gang vocal, tough guy emo, tough guy emo song. Like the whole song is gang vocals, or you do it double vocals, but they just kind of sound like gang vocals the whole way. It kind of helps sell the bad singer. And I kind of, he's pretty lumpy. This thing is pretty lumpy. And I want to dial back to Quantum Colossus, because I was a little hard on him. But what I forgot to say was that if there was a really good singer in that band, I don't think I would have liked it. You know, if Neil Perry, Steve Perry, one of the Perrys, if any of the Perrys were singing for Quantum Colossus, I would be like, who cares? The fact that they have kind of like a loose singer, maybe that's for the best. Maybe that's actually a good thing. And this band, maybe the same thing with this band. If they had like if they had the Sunny Day Real Estate guy singing for this, I would just be like, this is boring. I wouldn't thought about it. I did think it was funny that I looked down at the track on my computer while it was playing and while I was reading the lyrics, and I was like, they're done with the lyrics and I'm only a quarter of the way through the song. So I got worried, and I don't know how it doesn't sound that bad. It sounds kind of tight for what they did, for just showing up with, you know, 7 or 8 words. And it sounds like it's a pretty serviceable 2000s hard emo ram jam. I think it was a good to end here. And you know, they knew they were going to hit Mike eventually, that yeah. Mike was going to look at this. He was going to take out his scale of souls and weigh the runtime against their souls. I don't know. Did they make it? What was the runtime on this? Did they make it to heaven?
I think it was close to 7 minutes. We got close. It's yeah. I'm bad at math. We own 3:05 and 3:27. So 6:30 It's close. I don't know. I don't think they make it. I think you got to have at least 7 minutes. So,
jeez, guys, you did your best with your two tracks, but I'm sorry.
Yeah, man. So they must have just split out there. Like, listen, we can have one good EP or 3 7-inches. So I guess they went to the 3 7-inch route. Yeah. But overall, you know, it's a nice little blast from the past, I guess. This is my usual rating system is either throw it in the trash, get this record on the bargain bin in the bargain box, pay full price or pay collector's prices for it. This is, I think, the mildest recommendation to get it on clearance in the bargain bin. I just think that just to update, because I know not everybody's listening every single episode, but I'm not just judging on just the music alone. Like, it's a total package for me. I'm judging by importance. I'm judging by art. I'm judging by music, like everything. And I just think Alone Records has so many other great records you can buy probably for cheap, because they're all by bands that no one cares about anymore, that are actually good, that probably have meatier layouts to them and more to say. So I don't think musically, I don't think this is too bad. And I think if you were into that 2000s emo sound and you're looking for something, this definitely pick this up for a buck or two. But I'm saying, if you are just a person that's just into having like notable records or don't really care for that sound, then definitely just throw this in the trash. But for me personally, I would buy this again for $2.
Our docket is pretty stocked with ideas for future one-off for 7-inch club bands. But, you know, if we get enough time sometime down the road and we decide to mess with like the Sailor Tattoo emo era, I will for sure rip off the "Wait for You" part. That's going in there. No question. I'm taking it. It's mine. And I've mentioned on this show before that I like, you know, I like Ian MacKaye shouty indie emo. So shouting over indie rock or shouting over emo rock. I like that. Just bellow. And you got me. I like that. It extends to a lot of things. If you could bellow over a lot of music, and I probably like it. I like it when it doesn't belong, too. Like if you're in a smooth jazz band and you just show up and start shouting over them, give it to me. That sounds cool. This era of post-hardcore and emo kind of arose at the same time that I think a lot of soft city people started dressing like lumberjacks, like wearing the the plaid shirts and the hats. And I don't have a receding hairline, so I didn't have to do that. Like I have luscious flowing locks of hair. I've never fallen for the lumberjack look. I'm also pretty pudgy, so it doesn't really look good on me. You'd think Paul Bunyan, you know, you could be a big guy or whatever. No, you kind of look like an asshole when you have your untucked flannel hanging over your huge gut. But there was a company called Made, I think, or Make, or Made, Best Made, who would take a $19 Home Depot axe, dip that some bitch in paint, sell it to you for $200. 200 crisp American dollars they take out of you for it had like a Crate and Barrel paint color dipped on the handle or whatever. And, you know, I got to dock points for the default Quark Express layout. I definitely got to dock some points for that single stroke font. But I'm going to give you 3 of those axes out of 5. 3 of those best made axes out of 5. That's not too bad. Those are $200 bucks a piece. That's $600. You split that 4 ways. You guys are eating tonight. So that's enjoy.
Yeah, I thought Scott was going to absolutely hate this. So it's definitely
I would have gone 3.5 if it wasn't for being two lousy songs and a criminal layout. But three. You got to live with 3.
Yeah, you got to put a little more effort in there. I realize I completely forgot to plug our social media because I just hate doing that stuff. But I love doing the social media. So please follow us on Instagram. It's for 7-inch Club. It's all letters. You go there. I post flyers. I post news updates. Talk a little shit. It's all there. Mm-hmm. Go to the Instagram for 7-inch Club. Also, our YouTube for 7-inch Club, where we post these songs in full if you need to hear them. And along with the scans for the record and all that, along with the Instagram. And if you need to reach out to us privately, you can't say it in public. You can go to first7inchclub@gmail.com and send us an email if you need to, if you have a lot of like requests and you don't want to clog up the Instagram. But that's it. That was a nice easy episode after the nice holiday. So we'll be back next week probably with a request, but maybe not. But we'll see. We'll talk to you then.
I got no zingers. I'm just gonna paste the part where he sings "Way for You" a couple times at the end.